Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
So we have a do with the SFU pipe band. And then talk a little about the weekend's call. Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It is Monday, July 22nd. I'm your host, Magnus Tiewald. Joining me here in the studio...
Peter R.H. There's going to be the woman from the Peak.
Yes, Hannah Fraser will be joining us in a little while to tell us what's up in the Peak this week. We have some good stories for this week. We have an interview with the SFU Pipe Band. As you may or may not know, the SFU Pipe Band is a world championship band and travels to many events. And they were recently at the Skagit Valley Highland Games. And Connor Ashton, our music director here, did an interview with them. I say his name wrong.
Ezra Levant of
Ezra Levant.
I met him in person, and I took him to task because Conrad Black was on a speaking tour with these Rebel News people, and I wasn't expecting to see him, and I said, so I said to him,
do you want to save that for your conversation?
Yeah, sure, I'll save it. I just don't know how much to preface things.
Yeah.
But
Ezra Levant is the editor of Rebel News, which is a well-known right-wing
It's a news. Podcast. He's not really an editor. He has his own little show on it. And
yeah.
It's audio-visual. It's not like a newspaper.
Right. And a sort of well-known commentator and pundit and agitator for conservative...
Agitator.
He is, kind of.
Well, I agitated the agitator.
So there you go. Well, we'll hear your story later on. Hannah Fraser will be here from the Peak to talk about what's coming up in this issue. We'll have our weekly discussion with Pablo Vimas in Gardening with Embark. Plus some great music, Bird Note, and a whole lot more. First, this weekend, another dramatic weekend in American politics. Of course, last weekend we had the attempted assassination on Donald Trump. And this week, on the Democrat side, Joe Biden dropped out of the race.
Well, he did the right thing as such. I mean, I guess he got COVID and he got a bit sick, and he just sort of, I mean, he was sort of holding on a bit too long, but you know, it's funny that he became very criticized for not dropping out.
Mm-hmm.
But now he sort of, I don't know, maybe he would have done it eventually or whatever, but so there you go.
I'm sure it was a very tough call for him, you know. I mean, he had to face up to his very personal issues as a gentleman getting right up there in age.
Well, the other thing is that now he can pay attention to the presidential duties until
the remainder of the time.
Well, I mean, I think he's last week, or I think it was last week, I talked about other presidents who were who were not in the tip-top shape and they were still president, like Wilson had a stroke. And for nearly a year, or a little bit over a year, I think his second wife was really, they argue, running it. And Franklin Roosevelt, from 1944 to 1945, he was doing like 4 hours a day. And mm-hmm. not that it was, he was, I mean, it was, in many ways with Franklin Roosevelt, he was sort of seen, even though it wasn't that much he was spending because he was so sick, he had hypertension and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But he was seen as basically indispensable in a way for his intellect, even though I have a few disagreements as a few of the sensibilities he had. But so I think he'll do well until January. One thing I think that's been sort of a criticized by people is how they're the Israeli conflict, and I guess they're sort of caught from both sides, because one side thinks you're not supporting Israel enough, the other ones think you're doing it too much.
Well, that's very much the case with that particular issue, is both sides are very strong on what they believe, and there's not a lot of common ground there, you know. So, I mean, there's no way to please both sides, which is why that conflict goes on and on and on, and doesn't seem to have a resolution anytime soon. I mean, it's more complicated than that, but I mean, that's sort of a key point. I think with Joe Biden, though, you know, for me, I mean, you know, I only see what I see in public. And, you know, I mean, he's definitely slowing down. I saw a quick clip of him from the 2000 campaign where he came bounding up on the stage with his big grin and, you know, looking very much like the Joe Biden of old compared to the Joe Biden we see today, who's definitely a lot older. And whether or not he's got the ability today to do the job, and he probably does, anyone who's had older parents knows how dramatic the change over 4 years can be when you're in your 80s. I mean, you can go from fine to very not fine, and 4 years is a very, very long time at that stage of life. You know, and, you know, even if he was good for this year, and, you know, despite some verbal missteps and stuff, which he would have been called on every single time he did it, which from a political point of view would have been really damaging. Just the general issue of, you know, you can see the transition from 4 years ago to today. And what is that going to mean from today to another 4 years, or really 4.5 years before he'd finish a second term? So I think it was probably the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think it's also kind of, but the Trump team is sort of maybe in disarray because they weren't expecting him. Yeah. But that vice president pick was the Trump team is kind of bad. That guy is sort of
J.D. Vance. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he's. If I were to bet, I would bet on the Democrats now, because the vice presidential pick they picked is sort of kind of out there. There's a lot of questionable things about him.
And he's kind of like just another mini Trump, in the sense that he, these days, espouses all the same values and professes his loyalty. So what does he do to broaden the appeal of the Trump campaign beyond what Trump already offers, right? I mean, he solidifies, you know, the message for Trump's base, but they're not going anywhere no matter what. You know, I mean, you know, his old statement about being able to head down to Fifth Avenue and shoot someone and not lose voters probably holds as true today, if not more so. So J.D. Vance isn't really adding anything to their campaign in their sense of, you know, broadening their campaign to independent voters, you know, the sort of people between them and the Democrats that sway back and forth that they have to get to win the election.
There's a podcast, it's called If Books Could Kill, kind of, it's called If Books Could Kill.
Yep.
And then they go over these books that they think are ridiculous or bestsellers. And one was the book he wrote, J.D., Hillbilly, whatever it was. And if you go to that podcast, because they did it about a year ago, analyzing the book, and it's sort of interesting how they analyze that book. Well, I thought it was sort of interesting. It saves you from reading the book and seeing the film. And the book is more like an actual essay than the film, which I haven't read the book, haven't seen the film, but I heard their podcast about it.
Right.
So it might fill you into sort of the problems with them if people hear that.
Right. All right. Well, if you're for the political nerds out there, this must be a super exciting time to watch what's going to happen over the next few weeks before the Democratic National Convention, when they will affirm their nomination for their candidate. Joe Biden is part of his stepping down endorsed Kamala Harris, as have a lot of other big wigs. But who knows who else will raise their hand to perhaps say they want to have a try too.
Yeah, well, Kamala Harris, she's been... people have seen her odd. Like, she just seems a bit of an odd personality through the almost 4 years. It's kind of funny that people are sort of backing away from it, because some people just thought, well, she's making an odd statement here, she's making an odd statement there. But I don't know. I get, you know what? I think she could win. If she was nominated, she could win. But it's interesting that... over the almost 4 years, she has been seen as a bit odd in her
Yeah, I haven't behavior. Seen. I haven't seen a lot of that firsthand, but I've definitely read some articles that have made that point, and I guess we'll see how that plays out during the campaign. I presume she's going to be selected, because I think sure someone could raise their hand and say, you know, I'm going to go too. But a lot of the heavy hitters and a bunch of the possible alternative candidates have already lined up behind her, and 3 weeks is not a lot of time to raise your profile enough to challenge the lead she's kind of got at this point, but you never know what happens.
The thing is, what's the running mate going to be? That'll be interesting too. So he has to pick somebody, so that's something that's going to be done, I guess.
Yeah, and from what I've heard, probably a Midwest governor who's in one of those battleground states that they talk about.
Oh, you've heard something I haven't.
Yeah, I just heard some speculation. I mean, it was not insider knowledge. It's more people looking at the situation and going, what choice makes sense? And, of course, there's those states in the presidential election, because of the way it's chosen with the electors and stuff. You know, where it's not just a popular vote, it sort of comes down to a breakdown state by state, and you have to win each state to get the delegates. And so there's certain states that are in play, and that's where they're going to choose somebody from. Those states that could go either way for either campaign, and so you want to do whatever you can to sort of sway those ones. Because, you know, some states like California are solidly Democratic, and they're going to vote Democratic, and all those delegates are going to go to the Democratic candidate, just about no matter what. So you don't have to worry too much. And she's already from California. But you don't have to worry too much about those. It's those ones that could go either way and that sort of really sort of determine the outcome.
Well, that in 2016, I think this is why he won. He didn't win the popular vote in Donald Trump. But he sort of just said, I'm not going to bother with California, and I'm going to put all my energy in things. So he sort of, whereas Hillary Clinton seemed to be haywired, going like a chicken with the head cut off, whereas Trump was more like, hey, I'm not even going to try California. Get my supporters if they want to be obsessed with it, but I'm not going to. So, but he that vice president pick, I think a lot of what was happening is that the Trump voters going to vote for Trump. But the people that were really anti-Trump, some of the younger ones that didn't like how the Israeli conflict was going, were just not going to vote either way. They're not going to. But I think now it's going to be more of that vote for the Democrats that they maybe would have lost. So I think they could pull ahead now.
All right, well, we'll see what happens. It's 4 months or a little under 4 months to the election, and lots can happen between now and then.
Yeah.
All right. So on to our first feature today. This is Connor Ashton is our music coordinator here at CJSF, and someone very proud of his Scottish and Gaelic heritage. He wears his kilt as his formal wear whenever it's required. And he did an interview with the SFU Pipe Band. They are one of the best pipe bands in the world and are part of every convocation ceremony here at SFU or a contingent to the band. piping the graduands into Convocation Mall as part of the ceremony. They're six-time World Championship winners and also the Grade 1 champions at the recent Skagit Valley Highland Games. The current two times World Drum Corps champions in 2022 and 23. Connor recently interviewed the leader of the SFU pipe band, Rob Marshall.
Welcome back to CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm joined once more by Rob McNeil, president of the SFU pipe band. Thanks so much for coming back on the air.
My pleasure. It's great to be back.
We find ourselves at the Skagit Valley Highland Games down in just north of Seattle in Washington. It's a nice hot summer day here, and the SFU Pipe Band just competed and won in the Grade 1 division here at the Skagit Highland Games. What's next on the calendar for the band?
Well, this is the second to last regional competition for us. We've got essentially a week off, but working on practicing and other things. And then we will be heading down the I-5 again to Enumclaw for the Pacific Northwest Highland Games the last weekend of this month. Here it's a two-day games there, and it's been one that we've been going to for many years, and it's like the season finale.
It's a big one. I was out of town during the BC Highland Games, and I've gone to that every single year, so I was so miffed that I wasn't able to make it this year, but that's normally where I kind of catch the start of the SFU Pipe Band season. And then, of course, coming up in August, we have the Worlds.
Yes, the World Pipe Band Championships coming up in the mid-August. And the band is going to be leaving the weekend of the, I think it's August 10th, 9th, 10th, 11th. And then it leads up to the championship the following weekend, the Friday and the Saturday.
And it's huge. I mean, everybody comes to that one. We have bands from Australia, from Canada, from the UK, from all over the world. And it's a prestigious band. It is I like to call it the Wimbledon of pipe bands.
Yes, it certainly is. You know, all bands gear up for that.
Yeah.
And there are a few other bands that are going to be going over from Canada.
Mm.
One of the bands that was competing today in Grade 3, Greatland Crossing Pipe Band, is going to be competing in the Grade 3A.
Fantastic. In addition to the SFU Pipe Band, which is Grade 1, the highest grade of competition, there's also a Grade 3 and Grade 4 RMM, the Robert Malcolm Memorial Band, and they do great because they are kind of the SFU band's feeder program and get people trained in the ways of piping and drumming.
Yes,
well.
That's right. And our Grade 3 band and Grade 4 band, mm-hmm. were here today,
mm-hmm.
and Grade 4 band got third in their medley event today.
Yeah.
And the Grade 3 band got second,
yes.
in both events in the aggregate.
Fantastic. Yes. Good stuff. Now, I know that also in other big news, two-time reigning World Drum Corps champions headed by our very own Reed Maxwell. And for those of you who don't know, Reed actually received an honorary doctorate from the university not too long ago.
Yes, that's right. It's now it's Dr. Maxwell.
I know, right?
it was a great ceremony. It was so great to be able to see him honored by the university.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell from the presentation he was so humbled and overwhelmed by it. Yes.
He has so much tact and precision, yet at the same time so much humility and grace as a person. And I've chatted with him a few times after concerts, and he always makes time to talk with everybody. And I appreciate that about the accessibility of this band. Everyone is of a high caliber, but at the same time, they still welcome you like family.
Yeah, exactly. And the other element, you know, of it is that we were very much a teaching organization that reflects what Simon Fraser University does.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was also great to be able to see Reed honored for his contributions to teaching there, which has just been tremendous over these years.
When I come up on Tuesday evenings, I host a show in the late night, 8 to 10, but normally around 6 or 7 p.m., I'll occasionally catch the band practicing outside, and that's usually where Rob and I bump into each other, so it was nice and fortuitous to see each other at these games. Is there anything else on the calendar that we should be aware of after the Worlds?
No, not that we will be competing after the Worlds, but then when back in September we get together, the junior band starts again, and we've been also very successful with regard to recruiting for new members.
Oh, beautiful.
By doing different things, some social media aspects, performances in schools. And it has helped because the players that we get in today, our hope is that by nurturing and mentoring and training, that they could be the SFU pipe band members of the future.
I believe so.
And so then with that, in October, convocation resumes again.
Yes. Always nice to hear. For those of you who don't know, when students convocate, they graduate at SFU, they are piped in by members of the SFU pipe band. And it's always such a cool experience because the acoustics in Convocation Hall are quite unique, coming down the steps from the academic quadrangle, and then you have this wide open space between the Maggie Benson Center and the library, and it's just a nice outdoor experience, which it is where the pipes shine.
Yes, it's a great ceremony all around. We've been doing that for over 40 years now.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and I tell people the first year that we became the SFU Pipe Band, I remember the first year we did convocation, it was one day, all day, on a Saturday in June. And now you look at, it's basically like four full days in June and two full days in October. It just shows you the growth of the university and the number of graduates that have come through. And I think of, like, everyone that comes down, you just sort of see them and think of the years that they put into that. And from the pipe band's perspective, we're performing for them.
Absolutely.
It's all about them that day.
Thank you again so much. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. We'll also speak briefly after this about how we can, as a radio station, help promote the band as a learning opportunity, because it's not just a performance practice, but it's also an educational opportunity. And we are blessed to have such a high caliber institution and group such as the SFU Pipe Band. So again, thank you so much, Rob. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, it's great to see you again. And this time in a different setting rather than on the mountain.
Indeed.
We're in Mount Vernon.
Fantastic. If you want to find more information about the SFU Pipe Band, just go to sfupipeband.com.
Correct.
And you can also follow them on social media. I believe it's at SFU Pipe Band.
Yes, we're on Facebook, we're on X, we're on Instagram, and also our YouTube channel.
Oh, and you can catch performances from multiple Highland Games. They usually put up the videos pretty much right after.
Yes, that's right. The performances of SFU Pipe Bands appear on our YouTube channel. And all the performances from today of all of the bands appear on the BC Pipers Association YouTube channel. And I've been helping to do some of the recordings because they're also an educational and learning opportunity for the pipe bands.
Absolutely. Would highly recommend everybody to go check out the band as well and keep an eye out for August when the band competes at the Worlds. Again, thank you so much, Rob. We'll talk with you soon.
My pleasure. Thanks again.
We'll be right back.
That was the SFU Pipe Band live at the Skagit Valley Highland Games just last month. Thanks to Connor Ashton for that interview. Joining me in the studio this morning is